We'll be taking a high dive into domestic politics with the convention starting next week. But before the summer is out, come with me for a look at a pair of achievements in the crucial area of global public health. We start with this odd proposition. Can healthcare in the third world be transformed by the principles of, get this, fast food franchising? We went to Kenya, where this revolutionary business model is surviving not just the typical problems of a startup, but also civil unrest. Dan Logan produced this report on social entrepreneurs at work, part of a series we call Enterprising Ideas. Out on the highlands of Kenya, we first met Michael Side.
How are you?
One of the world's top experts on franchising.
I assure you we're going to get better pricing.
Over the years, he's consulted for big-name outfits like Burger King, Holiday Inn, and 7-Eleven. A veteran of corporate America and a native of Brooklyn, Side seemed a little out of place, singing traditional songs in rural Africa. But he was a businessman on a mission.
I've never had the chance ever to say, I might be able to save somebody's life. I may be able to save more than one life. And that's a heady kind of statement for a guy who just does franchising. I mean, I do hamburgers and I do hot dogs and I do hotels and I do, you know, dog sitting services, and all of a sudden I can save lives. Yeah, I've got to come back.
Side is one of several big names in franchising who are convinced that the business model making millions of dollars in the U.S. can save millions of lives in Africa. They're consulting for an operation called Child and Family Wellness Shops, or CFW Shops, a network of tiny drugstores and medical clinics. It's an innovative approach to delivering low-cost health care in Africa. We've been reporting on its progress for over a year, and there have been both growing pains and new successes. The shops are owned and operated by Kenyans, like Credence Mena, who runs an outlet in the remote village of Kiburu, 3 hours north of Nairobi.
All of a sudden, you got this entrepreneur, and you got to get excited about this. Her stock is up strong. She got a full retail offering. She did not go to business school or management school or marketing school. This is great. This made my day.
The hope is that the entrepreneurial spirit of people like Mena, trained in healthcare, harnessed by the franchise business model, could become a powerful new tool to take on the African health crisis.
What I like about franchising is that the franchisee is self-motivated to do this, yeah, to do this activity. In our case, our mission is to serve the poor.
Lisa Kimbo, who once managed a chain of high-end pharmacies, helped open CFW Shop's first stores 8 years ago. It's still a small operation, 68 outlets in all. But Kimbo sees great promise in a business model with very little overhead per patient.
We are right now hanging at about a dollar per patient served per year. So I don't think there's any other system in the world, seriously, that can have claims of such efficiency.
Here's how it works. The CFW people recruit local Kenyan entrepreneurs and carefully vet them to make sure they're qualified to deliver health care and run a small business. The first test for Credence Mena was to raise the equivalent of $300 to pay what's called a franchise fee, just like you would for starting any Dunkin' Donuts in the U.S. In return, the central office gave her business training and a microloan to get the shops outfitted with medicine. These resources allowed her to be her own boss and support a decent standard of living.
So how many patients do you see in a typical day?
It is from 50 to 100.
50 to 100 people come through here?
Yeah.
Are you the champion at CFW Shops for having so many patients?
Yeah, I'm the champion.
15 months later, Mena is still a champion among the top sellers of all CFW Shops franchisees, who have now served over 2 million patients. The healthcare franchise idea was conceived by Scott Hillstrom, a corporate lawyer and businessman from Minnesota. One day, he read a newspaper article with a chilling fact. 25,000 children die every day because they don't get the medicine they need.
I remember looking out the window after I read this and thinking, what would a pile of corpses of children that big, what would that look like? I realized that if I had an experience like that, I would be living a very different life than I was.
The classic response to a thought like that by a wealthy person might be to find an organization that is addressing this problem and start writing some checks.
Well, I actually had been doing that for quite a long time.
Hillstrom's problem was with the results of those checks. Over $500 billion in foreign aid has been given to sub-Saharan Africa over the last 40 years by one count, yet terrible health conditions remain endemic.
The money's already flowing into Africa, so it isn't really a question, is money available? The real question is, are there better ways to use the money that's already flowing in?
Hillstrom's insight was to see franchising, of all things, as a solution. He took several trips to rural Africa to find out more about the health care challenges on the ground. And in the process, he uncovered some interesting facts. For instance, medicines in Africa tend to be pretty cheap, especially the drugs that treat the most common causes of death, like malaria and diarrhea. Plus, most African governments try to offer those drugs for free. The big problem is how those drugs are being delivered. Bad roads and weak regulation prevent good quality medicine from getting to people in the first place. For instance, many drugs that are sold on Kenya's streets are counterfeit.
They just wrap it up in a little piece of paper, and it's a pill. It could be a sugar pill or chalk. And a desperate mother will do anything to get the medicine, so they take advantage of that market opportunity.
But franchising has its own internal checks and controls that encourage the sellers of medicine to do the right thing. Quality and consistency is at the heart of successful franchising operations.
Probably the best way to explain it is to use an illustration. We're all familiar with Subway sandwiches.
Oh, yeah.
If you go into a Subway anywhere in the world, you'll find that they wrap the chicken wrap exactly the same way. We need to be diagnosing and treating disease that consistently.
If a franchisee can't pull off consistency at CFW shops, there are penalties.
If you get warnings and you do not, whatever infraction it is, you're not addressing it, then according to the franchise agreement, you will be closed down.
Plus, the franchise is well suited for replication and expansion on a large scale because the overhead to run the entire network of shops gets so much cheaper when measured per store.
It took Subway something like 10 years to reach some number like 75 or 80 stores. But in the 30 years that followed, they reached 26,000 stores.
But numbers like that are a long way off for CFW shops. The company is growing, but in recent months, it has been tested by some extraordinary events. Kenya erupted in political violence last winter after President Mwai Kibaki was accused of stealing the election from the opposition candidate. Hundreds died in vicious, ethnically motivated attacks. Some of the most intense fighting occurred in the Nairobi slum of Kibera, where just 8 months earlier we had first visited CFW franchisee Dora Nyanja. She was already facing a daunting caseload in a settlement where roughly 1 million people live in destitute poverty.
Now, Dora, you're not here 7 days a week, are you?
Oh, David, you cannot afford to close a single day here.
She kept to that promise during the area's grimmest hour. Kibera was a war zone, with police firing tear gas and live bullets, and mobs on the attack with machetes.
There were threats all over. I would receive text messages on my phone of attempted attacks by other vigilante groups. It was really scary.
Nyanja stayed in the clinic for four straight days and nights, treating hundreds of victims with machete cuts and bullet wounds, risking her own life in the process.
I stayed put because I knew this is a very crucial period. I have to support the people who are fighting back what they felt was not done well. So I stayed put and I said, I'll hang on.
During the violence, an angry crowd threatened the clinic itself. But a group of local people who knew about Nyanja's work in the community fended them off.
They said, we are here with you. We know what you have been doing, and no one is going to get into your premises.
In the end, Nyanja's clinic and her staff emerged unscathed. Thankfully, that was the case at every other CFW outlet in Kenya. Most of the clinics were located in areas that were comparatively peaceful. But business at some outlets did take a hit, in part because during the violence, CFW shops could not get medicine through to several clinics. Scott Hillstrom visited Kenya last month.
We had a delivery truck that couldn't move for a full week. Patients are still coming to clinics and the drugs are disappearing from the shelves. So we ended up with franchisees who had no choice but to go out into the market and buy medicine wherever they could find it.
That led to CFW Shop's nightmare scenario, franchisees violating the rules by selling untested, potentially counterfeit drugs. But franchisees like Nyanja felt there was no other solution.
I had to use my common sense because there was no other way out. There's no way I was going to send my patients away without medicine.
We should anticipate that franchisees will be buying drugs somewhere else. And we didn't anticipate that.
After the violence, CFW Shops inspected its stores for unapproved drugs and pulled them from the shelves. For Nyanja, problems persist even months later. In Kibera, the local economy is still reeling and fewer patients are able to pay her for care than ever before. Nyanja says she's gone through her entire personal savings to stay afloat. But even after all she's been through, Nyanja's clinic is still up and running. And more help has arrived at CFW Shops, a new high-powered CEO. Dr. Gunther Faber worked for pharmaceutical giant GlaxoSmithKline and its predecessors for 30 years, most recently overseeing all of the company's drug sales across sub-Saharan Africa. He left Glaxo for CFW Shops in June, taking a whopper of a pay cut in the process.
You get to a stage in life, is it the dollars that count all the time? Or is it doing something that you know has got tremendous potential, not only to save lives in Africa, but also to lift people out of the poverty trap?
At Glaxo, Faber had been looking at several different ways to make drugs more affordable in the poorest parts of Africa, through health insurance funds and technological innovations. But he is convinced that Hillstrom's idea is the best solution.
I said to Scott, you know, you have found the Holy Grail. Because the Holy Grail that I've been looking for years.
I still got to pinch myself to to believe that a guy of this caliber and experience is even interested in a job like this. I've never heard of somebody like this taking over an NGO.
Dr. Faber has what you might call an extensive Rolodex, heads of state from all over the globe, and big players in the private sector involved with healthcare in Africa.
And if you could also just keep me in the loop, I'd appreciate it. I know the distributors in the market, I know the manufacturers, I know the outlets, I know what to do, and in fact, if we get it right, the sky's the limit.
On his agenda, meet every single franchisee in the network to learn about their dedication to the brand. Plus, he wants to find a single drug supplier for the entire company to improve quality and cut costs. But the most pressing challenge for Faber will be to keep this business-oriented venture from operating too much like a typical nonprofit aid organization. Franchising consultant Michael Side was worried about just that and had issued a tough critique.
I'm going to have, my rabbi hopefully doesn't hear this, I'm going to have a come to Jesus meeting. I'm going to take them down and put the fear of God into them, because we're not on a mission from God, we're on a mission from commerce. God forgives, business people don't.
That wasn't just talk. CFW Shops, worried that it was becoming a top-down bureaucracy, laid off half of its staff at the corporate franchisor level. What's more, the company would like to dramatically alter how it funds its operation. Under a new system, charitable grants would directly fund medical care for patients. The corporate franchisor would become more commercially driven, paying for itself by charging the shop's royalties.
That way, our NGO operates like a real franchisor and learns to live on the royalties it can earn rather than on grants.
To get more grant money, CFW Shops tapped into President Bush's multi-billion dollar AIDS initiative, which he renewed last month. And if CFW is successful in the long run, they hope to inspire others to take their franchise model and run with it in other countries.
This is how ultimately we can make franchise healthcare just as commonplace as microcredit has become throughout the world.
The goal is to have clinics up and running in 14 countries in just 5 years. This past May, CFW opened shop in country number 2, nearby Rwanda. The first clinic there is located in the outskirts of Kigali, the capital city.
Here we display a wide range of hygiene products.
Emmanuel Indoba leads CFW in Rwanda and runs the first clinic along with a nurse who used to work at a local hospital. So far, Indoba's shop has been seeing about 20 customers a day. He needs about 30 per day to turn a good profit. But feedback in the community has been enthusiastic.
Some people just walk away after paying the bill, saying, maybe these people may change their mind because this is so affordable that I cannot believe this costs that much.
Indoba, born and raised in a refugee camp, knows what it's like to have little access to health care. Half of his 10 brothers and sisters have died from disease.
I could have died of any of those diseases that I had in the refugee camp. But knowing I'm here sitting, thinking, doing to help another life, to save another life, that is for me huge enough.
Rwanda, you'll recall, was torn apart by a terrible campaign of genocide 14 years ago, and its infrastructure, including its healthcare system, remains in recovery. But the country is making impressive strides overall. Its economy grew 6% last year, and its small size and dense population will make it easier for CFW to expand and deliver medicine to the shops. Plus, with a brand new operation, CFW can improve its business model from the ground up. Unlike in Kenya, the first outlets in Rwanda will be company-owned, which is how most franchises start in the U.S. All of this has the company optimistic that it'll continue to improve on its bottom line, saving lives.
But the relationship between the community and the CFW clinic is what is going to make this model actually work in Rwanda and other countries.
We want to turn now to another area of global health where there's been remarkable progress. Millions of people in poor countries are living and thriving today because of a massive program to dispense medicines that give people with HIV/AIDS healthy, productive lives. Senior correspondent Maria Hinojosa and producer Brian Epstein have our report.
I used to think that AIDS was a complete death sentence. You got AIDS, you were going to die. And with this new treatment, it's clear that you're going to survive and live a productive, potentially happy life. I think once you start to actually get to know these people, whether you meet them or see them through pictures or stories, I think that humanity comes through and you just stop thinking about them as statistics and you think of them as, you know, real people.
Photojournalist Steve McCurry and seven others from the renowned agency Magnum Photos spanned the world to document the global AIDS epidemic. These photos, however, are pictures of hope. The photographers, in partnership with the international foundation known as the Global Fund, set forth to show how free antiretroviral medicine is dramatically changing the lives of those infected. The program is called Access to Life. The Bush administration has so far committed about $5 billion to the worldwide effort to provide free AIDS treatment to poor nations. Steve McCurry, best known for his photo, The Afghan Girl, traveled to Vietnam and documented patients before and after AIDS treatment. One was Nguyen Quoc Khan, who contracted AIDS from a dirty needle after using heroin.
Nguyen lived with his wife and two children in an extremely small one-room apartment. His two children were so kind of embarrassed about his condition, the fact that he had this kind of unmentionable disease, that they wouldn't bring their friends by. There's this real stigma. I remember we went down stairs into the courtyard of their building, and when we came up the stairs, he could barely walk. I thought I was going to have to end up carrying him up to his apartment. The despair and the hopelessness on his face I thought, this is profound. This guy is going to, you know, die right in front of my face. So this family's life was coming unraveled. When we first got there, he was like the walking dead. And when we went back 4 months later, it was though it was a completely different person. It was though he had woken up out of this sort of slumber and was active. I mean, you could see there was an enthusiasm about life, and that he was eager and had the energy to go back to work. He's a painter. He seemed to be painting things just for fun. I mean, and I'm sure without that treatment, this guy would not be around today.
Experts agree that medicine alone cannot solve the crisis. It will take prevention and education. The treatment, however, is the first step for countries hit hard by AIDS. Photographer Jonas Ben Dixon traveled to Haiti to see what antiretroviral medicine could do for people like Marie Sonny St. Louis.
She was a very, very pale, very frail young woman just lying in bed inside a little hut. So she looked very, very bad off first time I saw her. I think when we first met her, she herself had very, very little hope to even stay alive another couple of weeks. The second trip, when we came back, I mean, I couldn't believe it. We were walking up the same little hill that we had visited 3 months before, and this woman was out in the yard, kind of doing yard work. I thought it was her cousin who had come to visit, something like that. But then I realized after a second look, it was her. You know, just put on an amazing amount of weight, you know, totally different energy levels, running around working. Spectacular change. You know, playing with the kids, thinking about the future, going to the marketplace, doing laundry by the river. I mean, these tiny things, for them, it was getting life back. I mean, without the medicines, all the second half of my exhibition you could just cut off, and nobody would be alive today. It's that simple.
This medicine will not save everyone, and it doesn't prevent those taking the medicine from infecting others. But today, about 3 million people are alive because of those free antiretroviral drugs. That's a start. There are almost 7 million more in need of treatment.
I think our contribution can be simply to show their humanity, and that these are kind of our brothers and sisters, and we're all living on the same small planet. This treatment is the difference literally between life and death.